Minutes on the one-on-one with Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you got me, you got Barry, you got Gary. How you doing, Barry?
Bruce.
Find everything okay?
Yeah, I found everything okay. Thanks. Sorry.
Okay, well, hold on that. Sounds like Barry's getting his food. Gary, how you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, don't worry. I had to restart my whole freaking computer just to get things working. I've been fighting with it for the past 20 minutes. So apologize.
Yeah, I hung up and called in a couple times as well.
Oh, understood. Yeah, it's been nightmarish. My guess is things that need to be updated. So many things got updated, and I haven't bounced into restarted the computer in months. So it was probably just time to do that. Anyhow, okay, whatever. I don't care. Sorry. I'm trying to play around with my iPad over here, which I use for watching the Twitch stream. Okay, so we have that. Okay. Barry, how you doing?
Okay. Let me get my hood up so that'll take my ear pod out of the wind.
That would be good.
Yeah, I was checking out of the supermarket, and the cashier was saying, "Did you find everything okay?" And it's like, "Yeah, I don't need to talk to you. I just need to cash out."
Understood. Yeah, it's like, it sounds like you were getting food. So it's like, okay, let's mute Barry and get back to.
I was getting pistachios, olive oil, and Brussels sprouts, and carrots.
Awesome.
You got my car? No, where's my car? I don't know. It's a sun is in my eyes. You don't have it. I mean, you have to.
Okay.
It's freaking cold out here, which is really weird. Palm trees and cold.
How cold is it where you are? Jeez.
Well, I'm not cold. It's probably in the 60s.
Yeah, that's not cold. Back here in good old Pennsylvania, we got down into the 30s, so.
Yeah.
60, that's nothing.
Okay.
You got the shorts weather. Yes. Anyhow.
Yeah, I turned on my GPS. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be probably...
So my vacation to Mexico got canceled.
Oh, why did it get canceled?
That's because my wife texted me, and when I landed in Charlotte, this was a couple of weeks back.
Right.
And she said, okay, I had a really rough night, and it's like, I don't trust that my hip will be able, I won't be able to survive. So she's just going to hang on until she gets her double hip replacement in June.
Oh, okay. Okay, so basically you're delayed until after her hip replacement and her recovery from the hip replacement.
We're probably going to go someplace in October-ish.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Yep. But anyway, yeah. I did my homework.
I hope you can't hear my G. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Yep. I can't hear your GPS. But when the quick review of Caps Log number 50, 54, and 51. Actually, I looked at 52 and 53. And actually, one thing that was interesting. What was it in 51? I think it was that I've totally forgot about. Ah, it was in Ghost Signals. Which was
what signals?
Ghost Signals. That was the name of the article. It's Yuthiki.
Mm-hmm.
And Yuthiki Harmony.
Okay.
Was comprised of a species of squid-like invertebrates native to the ammonia/water layer of the Jovian gas giants. And one thing that was interesting to me was in the second paragraph of this lovely article. It says, tragically, the Andromedans took particular exception to the Yuthiki for reasons which remain unclear. The extragalactic invaders made a point of hunting them down, every last Yuthiki unit they could find, going so far as to heavily bombard Yuth itself in Y-151. Only two isolated colonies managed to survive this act of mass xenocide. Sorry, forgive me. I can use the right words, long enough to be discovered after Operation Unity. So.
So did they ever figure out what the Andromedans' big problem with the Yuthiki were?
I doubt it. Because of that would require insight by the Andromedans themselves. And the Andromedans weren't talking to anybody for the most part.
They don't.
The only ones they even slightly communicated with was the Orions. For supplies and things like that. You know, never asked them to do anything against the Galactics. Just more of pay them as mercenaries to get them supplies. That's my understanding, anyway. I'm sure if I got that wrong, Gary would be happy to correct me on that. Gary, you're still here, right?
I am. Sorry, I'll take a second.
Okay. Want to make sure, because you've been awfully quiet. So. But anyhow, that was actually the topic for this. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still here. I'd mentioned before that I was hoping either this week or an upcoming week that we could talk about the quantum wave torpedo. But if you want to focus on something else, then that's fine.
No.
We'll talk about the torpedo. But which torpedo were we talking about?
The quantum wave torpedo that's in Module C6.
Oh, okay. And that was for, what, the Gravians?
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, but before we go to the quantum wave torpedo,
right.
One person who might know why the Andromedans hated the Yuthiki so much would be Ken Burnside. Anybody is still talking to him.
It is possible. I wouldn't bet money on it.
What were you going to say?
Me or Gary?
Gary.
You mean about the quantum wave torpedoes?
I might have to drop off for a bit and call in a bit later. Would you guys be on until later, like half 10 or so?
Yeah. 10 or so? You mean in the next hour?
Sorry, just Yeah, I mean, I'll be on another half hour, so sorry for the hold up.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be here next half in another half hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's early for me.
Okay. Sure. See you back then.
Yeah. As I said, it's still sunny out here, so it's early yet for me.
Oh, understood. Understood. You're on the other side of the country versus me, which is always makes things interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all correct. Yeah. So, so good. Anyhow, on what was crap. Just thinking about
good news. I came back from California for my last trip, and my wife had found my brass Birmingham, which had been missing for about a year.
Yes, yes. Where'd you find it?
I don't know.
Okay. I was curious, because I know it was one of those things that you figured she probably put it like in the shop or up in the attic where you know, it's... Things go to disappear, you know.
I know. There's still some things that are missing that are kind of important that I put my hands on.
Well, obviously they're not that important. The reason why I say that is because of if they were that important, you know, you'd probably be pulling the house completely apart. Because you need to have them like jaw, you know, instead of, you know, it's okay. You know, they're important, but they're not so important that you need to be, you know, tearing the house apart to find them.
Well, it's definitely tear the house apart. Well, no, they are pull the house apart to find them important, but I just haven't been enough time to. Crap. But oops, I just cut somebody off.
I'm sure they did not appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I had my blinker on and he tried to pass me and it's like, fuck you, I'm going into your lane. Sorry about the language.
Yeah. Doesn't help our ratings.
Yeah. I know.
Come on.
I was in a right turn only lane and didn't realize it, and I needed to get out of it before I went on the interstate going the wrong way.
That would be bad.
Yeah. Okay. So, no, they're very important things, and I don't know... where they are.
Oh, I've
been missing for months. And I hope they haven't been stolen. That would be very bad.
Understood. Oh, come on.
His wife says they're somewhere in the house. Okay.
Know that one. Thank you. Yeah. So
we had another good one. It was, my wife was going out to Pittsburgh on Monday. She was going out to Pittsburgh on Saturday for like a week. She had purchased some stuff. She had paid extra for delivery guaranteed by Friday, the day before she left.
Mm-hmm.
And even though she paid like an extra $30 for delivery, this was supposed to be a gift for our future daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't show up. And they said, oh, it'll show up Monday. It's like, this is not good because I flew out Sunday. So it'd be like, oh, there'll be nobody home for a week. It'll just sit on our front porch for a week. $500 of silver coins.
Yeah, no, that's not good to be sitting out. Well, Yeah.
Yeah.
Invariably, something like that. The question is that are people, you know, are they the kind of people that will take anything that's off your front porch? I'm not saying that there aren't. That's not the... You know, because...
Yeah.
If people don't know what's in it, why would they bother it? You know?
Well, that's true. People would not know. That's such a thing. My wife's been into this kick, and she's been buying a lot of silver.
Hmm. Okay. I'm not sure how much silver will actually increase in value over the years, but okay, you know, to each his own.
Well, it doesn't go down, that's for sure.
Oh, understood. I'm not saying you'd lose money on it. I'm just saying, you know, if
yeah, well, like for example, she bought like probably several $1,000 worth of silver when the spot price was $21 an ounce, and then spot price went up to $25 an ounce, which is a good percentage.
Agreed. Okay.
What would be our topic?
Don't know at the moment, because the topic was actually what Gary, the original topic was what Gary was going to be talking about. And he disappeared.
Which was quantum wave torpedoes.
Quantum wave torpedoes. And also, since we actually are on that subject, that line of thought, the one thing actually also, there was another topic. I'm not going to go with the Uthiki. I will go with that. Which is back on, in Capsule number 50. Which is Zosman Stealth Fields. Talk about the Zosmans a little bit, which is interesting. I read a little bit about the history because, unfortunately, I'm a very slow reader. I've had a very busy week and weekend. Big surprise! It was Easter weekend, so I a lot of my time was spent.
So the Zosmans were they're the equivalent of the Orion Pirates, but in the Omega Quadrant.
That's correct. The big thing when it comes to the history of the Zosmans is that unlike, well, the Orions had home planets that they had, but in this case, the Zosmans actually had home worlds, and there was the big cataclysm and this big weather event, basically, that destroyed, you know, a lot of Zosman's planets that they had, you know, colonized and so forth. Only a few of the outer colonies, which were cut off during this event, they survived. And the only way they survived was piracy. That's the only way they could survive and get the resources that they needed to survive. And the one thing when it comes to the Zosmans is that the home world, they're overall, they, because of their location, they're not really, they don't need to be well defended, because if anyone finds, well, they're far enough out that if someone finds them, you know, it's going to take quite a bit of resources, time for them to get a fleet, you know, large enough fleet together. And that's why anyone who goes looking for those home worlds of the Zosmans, they will be destroyed. Big surprise.
Oh, they're that powerful.
Yeah, and also, you know, and there's enough ships around. They're not stationed on those planets, but they're around the planets, you know, close enough that planets, so that if there was a force, you know, they'd be able to come to the quote unquote to the rescue in time. And of course,
quite a powerful.
Yep, and the stealth field is actually it's a quite nice weapon. Though it's most effective when you're going less than speed 10, which is like okay, so you got satellite speed, you know, satellite ship speed. Because that's usually the restriction on satellite ships when they've been transported or disdevved out of the mothership. They have to stay like with speed 10. This seems quinky dinky in my mind, but anyway, for relatively cheap cloaking cost. Unfortunately, you only can turn on or off once a turn, but you can hold.
Does it run off a capacitor, or does it?
No, it's not a capacitor. You have to pre-allocate it. Talk about energy to operate the stealth field is normally allocated during energy allocation. Such an allocated energy can include the anticipated speed changes. And energy cannot be allocated for future turns. Allocated for the stealth field in turn number one can only be used for turn one and not used. And then if it's not used, then it's lost. And energy can be allocated in anticipation of otherwise unplotted speed changes, which might be lost if no such speed changes occur. Because that's the crazy thing, that if you do a speed change, the cost of the stealth field goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't...
So the cost, is the cost speed dependent, or just if you make a speed change?
Speed dependent. You have to... The total cost...
Speed dependent.
Right. The total cost of the amount you have to pay for having the stealth field to be completely active is basically I'll read it. Which is if the ship is moving faster than speed 10, the energy cost to operate the stealth field is increased by an amount of energy equal to the energy required for moving at the higher speed. For example, if a ship is moving, has movement costs of a third, wants to operate at speed 15, it would have to provide 1.67, you know, 1 2/3 points of power to operate the stealth field at that speed.
Okay, I'm going to mute for a second, then I will be back.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, so basically, you take the speed that you're going to be going at, you subtract 10, and then you have to pay for that much of movement cost. So in this case, movement cost for speed 5 in the case of the example, and pay that, put that in towards kind of reinforcing the stealth field. So that you can have maintain this stealth field. If you do not maintain this, the integrity of the stealth field, then it's as if I gotta look at this, because it wasn't quite as bad as
I'm back.
Yeah, it's not quite as bad as having it completely, you know, deactivated. But where is it?
Mm-hmm. So where is the rules? Is this in Captain's Log 50 or something?
Yep, Captain's Log number 50.
That's why I don't know anything about the Zosmans.
Yeah, well, the Zosmans are part of the Lost Futures that was lost during the Great Hard Drive Crash by Bruce Grahl. You know, Bruce Grahl. His hard drive crashed.
Yes.
So, know,
somebody's try to recreate them or
right. Some you know, and even some of the empires weren't completely done. But one thing that I think was mentioned, Capitol number. See, 36 to 38, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, where Bruce Grawl actually tells about the empires from his remembrance, the different empires, at least the general outline of them, you know, an idea of, yeah, of what they were. Now, when it comes to, I don't remember if he actually talks about the technologies that the different empires use. But, yeah. Because, you know, the Zosmans, they've been part of the Omega for a while. Again, they were part of the Lost Futures that was lost.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not sure of if the Zosman stealth field was originally part of those rules that were lost, or it's something that was come up with, which wouldn't surprise me if it was something
I had heard of the Zosman, and I had heard of the stealth field, but I didn't know too much about it.
Hmm? Oh, understood. But yeah, the Zosmans, just like the Orions, they were all over the Omega Octant. Though there were certain parts of it, yes, that they... Well, okay. For most part, when they were mercenaries, they would, you know, be a mercenary for almost anybody. But the Iridini is one that they... wouldn't ever be a mercenary for a work with, unless it was a really extreme circumstance. And the other one's Belasco. They seem like they had a real hate relationship. The Belasco?
Which two places did they have a problem?
Belasco and Iridini.
Okay, which were?
Or Dani.
Okay, Iridini.
I think it might be the Iridani.
The Iridani questers. Yes.
Yes. Those.
Yes.
Now, it seems
the Iridani would have been... The Iridani would not have been... they were all about honor and stuff like that. They would not have wanted to associate with pirates.
Right, but also one thing that is mentioned is that just because of how far the Iridani are from the Zosman Empire, that, you know, they really didn't interact that much. But it seems like when it comes to the Zosman and the Belasco, there was kind of a real hate relationship kind of going on there.
Well, And that actually makes sense, because the Belasco were traitors, so the Zosmans would have been their natural predators. So, yeah, why would the Belascos want to associate with their... It would be like sheep wanting to associate with the lion. Ain't going to happen.
Oh, understood. Where is it? I'm looking for. Don't mind me.
Was it? So, what is the effect of the stealth field?
Okay, just give me a sec here. There it is. This I want to continue talking about the Zosman for a moment and because I want to talk.
What effects is this?
Okay, here it is. Okay. About the Belasco and the Zosmans. The Belasco and Zosman ships almost always attack each other on sight. they refuse to serve alongside one another as mercenaries to a third party under anything less than a highly extenuating circumstance. Speculation outside observers as to the cause of this feud is rife, including a theory that the Zazmans may have something to do with Kirtanho, the aggressive power which first drove the Belasco from their home galaxy. However, neither Belasco nor Zazman are willing to discuss the matter. Most Belasco technology is off limits to the Zazmans. Most Marauder cells raiding in the Belasco home space prior to the destruction by the Soldra would likely deploy from Prober or Troban territory. The presence of small and large pods may complicate matters for the Zazmans, particularly on larger and more dangerous Belasco ship types. An exchanger frigate carrying a small self-defense pod might seem like a relatively easy mark. A merchant cruiser carrying a large battle pod is anything but. So. Mm-hmm.
The blasters could be nasty.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. That's definitely evident. By that, but okay, give me a sec. Get back to the Zazman stealth field. And I want to look at it. I think it's page before. Right, energy, right. Okay, darn, I read it. I just can't find it. Gotta love that. If a unit drops its warp engines, the cost of operating stealthy is infinitesimal. Masking the warp flare is the primary cost. As long as the unit has one power generating system, there is no cost to operating the stealth field at that point. Okay, here it is.
Drop the warp. You have to drop the warp completely. You can't just turn it off, right?
Right. That's what it says. If you do drop it, then there is no cost at that point. Okay, if a stealth field is rendered ineffective due to you moving too fast without paying the additional energy required on that speed, or simply moving too fast to benefit, then a lock-on to that unit by units not generating stealth field functions normally. A unit operating a stealth field that has become ineffective still under the restrictions. Big surprise. So basically, If you don't pay for it, pay enough for the stealth field, you can get locked on to, in which case, unlike cloaking, where if you have, hey Chris, unlike cloaking, where you actually still have a benefit, if the person has lock on to you, you get no benefit at all when it comes to the stealth field.
Oh. So the primary benefit is to destroy lock-ons.
Right. And basically have it so you can't fire at them. If it's an effective stealth field, you can't fire on that Zazman ship. Which is, again, unlike...
At all.
Unlike the cloaking ship. Cloaking ship you can fire at. Even if you don't have lock on to it, you just have a severe penalty.
Right. So this is an all or nothing.
If correct. Up,
the Zazman is immune to all damage. What about area effect weapons?
Well, that can still damage it. Yes, because area effect. But you can't fire on that in any non. Okay, it says non self guiding seeking weapons cannot be launched at a unit with operating stealth field. Any non-self-seeking weapons, So guiding seeking weapons, tracking it, which activates a stealth field, loses track and goes inert. The seeking systems of self-guiding seeking weapons are able to lock on if launched under D, due to their own lack of warp flare compared to that of any ship. Once the lock on is achieved, they pursue such a ship as normal. Wow. So. So if you have self-guiding seeking weapons, then the Zosmen are in trouble. Oh.
What's that? If you have self-guiding seeking weapons?
A seeking systems of self-guiding seeking weapons are able to lock on if launched under D-1922. I got to find what that is. Due to their own lack of warp flare. Compared to that of even a shuttle, once lock-on is achieved, they will pursue such a ship normally.
Huh. So the stealth field. So if a seeking weapon is self-guiding, it can basically ignore the stealth field.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, agreed. Right. As I said, a stealth field provides no protection from explosion, whether a ship explosion or a mine, and does not reduce the impact of seeking weapon in any way.
Is there a fade in, fade out, or lock
action? No, it doesn't. Nope. Okay, basically, if it's announced on it's a single impulse, if you deactivate on impulse 5, gains lock on units on impulse, gains lock on impulse 9, but that's just normal, activating your fire control. But it's
okay. So you turn it off on impulse 5, and then impulse 9, it activates.
No. If on impulse 5 you deactivate it, then on impulse 9 the Zosmen ship can then fire. But if you activation, you activate it on impulse 4, and by impulse 5. Boom, it's fully activated.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
You can pop out instantly.
Yep.
So if somebody launches like a plasma torpedo at you, it's too late to activate it after the plasma is launched.
Yep. Agreed.
Interesting.
Yep. Oh, by the way, Chris, thank you. Chris, sent me the original first edition pocket edition of Starfire. Not Starfire 2, Starfire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he sent me the PDF.
He got you a...
And it's like, oh, and wow, it's
impossible
like...
for me to get a copy of that PDF. I bought Starfire version 1. I just lost my printed boxed copy.
Yeah, it's like one page is the rules. Next page is the counters. And then you have two pages, which are just maps. I'm looking at this from a moment. It is. Yeah, the two maps come together to make one map.
Right.
Which is interesting because I'm looking at you want to talk about simplistic rules. It's simpler than even the first edition of Starfleet Battles. Because, dang, man.
Well, Starfire was an older game. Deep Hole was not yet warped up the complexity.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. You know what? But that was one thing definitely with when it comes to Starfire, which was later on, Starfire, just the most complicated part about Starfire became just building the ships. There were so many rules on building. So I still remember, I think it was was it the third edition or something? The third or fourth edition. I was reading it and I'm going, I read the same paragraph multiple times. I'm going, you know, this whole rule book needs to be rewritten to be simplified. It really does. And actually, I think somebody was doing that, and then Marvin Lamb, I forget, they had a fallout or something like that. And Marvin Lamb said, no, it fell out because of basically they were redoing the rules for the one version, and then, which was, I think, version 4, and Marvin Lamb wanted to sell the next version, and he couldn't do that if people want the older version. But, you know.
Mm. Right. But, so, anyway. If I remember correctly, the version I had, a ship was just a string of letters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And I think on one end had to be your shields, and then underneath that was armor, and then everything else could go in different.
Yeah, it's really, really simple. Anyhow, Gary's back. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Gary.
I'm not too late, am I?
No, you're not too late at all. Okay. We were talking about the Zosman stealth field while you were gone.
Okay. So, just as a side note, I remember reading in Module C5 that apparently Ken Burnside was saying that one of the Athiki weapons, the Positron Lancet, was inspired by a weapon from Starfire. So I don't know if that's true or not, but the Lancet is the one that it's got a special firing mode where it rolls a certain way on the deck. I can't remember how to explain it, but you think I'd know, but I don't have the book in front of me. But I don't know if it'd be worth considering that. You know,
if I remember correctly, you roll a die and it hits that whole row and just keeps hitting that row. It drills into it. It doesn't roll a dot. It's like if you do 5 points of damage, you roll a 6, you do 5 points on the 6th row of the back.
I think you have the amount of damage in total as a result of that, because although on the other hand, the Andromedans have the dissection beam, where it has a similar thing where it's basically, once you hit certain roll on the deck, then it basically just takes off all those systems. So, like, for example, you can use the dissection beam to sieve off, like, a warp engine box off a ship or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But it does, yeah. The implementation is different to the Positron Lancet, though.
Yeah. I don't remember it that well. Because that's one of those races Empires I never really played. And I seem to remember looking at it going, well, I wanted to make a tournament cruiser for it and never got around to it.
Well, the problem with them is that they only have one size class 3 ship, so you're basically, and it's not even theirs, it's like it gifts from the Batavai, so you're basically using a modified Batavai war cruiser to, so it's not really giving you the proper Empire flavor, because the Athiki only built ships that were size class 4.
Right. Well, they got. I think they were fairly early in their technological or development, or they just didn't have the resources to build larger ships.
Yeah, they only have a couple of profits on the map, plus whatever the bottom I give them.
Yeah, they just didn't have the resources to build anything more. So they were very resource limited.
Oh yeah, well, I was when it comes to the Thiki, to me the weird part about it is that they're squid like invertebrates. So, and most, right. And to my knowledge, most, if not all, ships, well, there were ships and not actually space creatures, were basically hard devices. So, you know, I have a hard time imagining that the Thiki really understood the idea, that idea of rigidity and so forth. And with...
Their ships have these microgravity environments, so they have rules like the Jindarians and such. You'd have difficulty like trying to beam over to board one. But like they do basically say about how there's like each quote unquote boarding party on an SSD only represents three individual Thiki. So because they're individually, I guess, large and dispersed enough, whatever. But even then, they're basically wearing gravity belts or whatever to try to, you know, keep active like on a ship that has standard gravity. So.
Mm-hmm. Understood. But I can't imagine being boarded by a Thiki. You know?
Well, anyway, so is there enough time tonight to go into any of the other stuff that we were talking about? Or, how soon are you guys going to start wrapping things up?
I plan on wrapping things up.
I can go for another hour.
Oh, you can go for another hour. I can't.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, because it's 10:30 here. I can go on for probably for another 10 minutes. It's about all I can give. Because it's 10:30. I usually wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
So. Okay. Well, that's probably not really long enough to give the Conway torpedo like a proper shake, so... I guess it might be a topic to stick in the drawer for another time.
Yeah. Also, I definitely went to it. I know part of our issue to start off with was just me having technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the quantum wave torpedo, the one that you're referring to is the one in module P6? That version?
That's right, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I have module pieces. Yes.
Because you did mention just at the very beginning of the show, you mentioned that there were a few issues of Captain's Log that you've been reviewing.
Yeah.
Just remind me again, which ones were it?
50, 51, and 54. I
looked 51 and 54.
And I think maybe a little bit of 52. I looked at 53 and 53 didn't seem to have anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, 53, it has some of the stuff about the Federal Republic, like the Klingon and Iron ships that acquired in the late 70s.
Mm. Right, right.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the Navy ships are in 51. I think it's a couple of command cruisers, an early one for the Trobo and one for the Coligar. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Because mm-hmm. One thing that is kind of like those SSDs kind of. Dabble in is the concept of warp refits, because like a lot of the historical ships, they weren't given the refits on the SSDs the way that you'd see in like the LMC or in Alpha, what's the whether or not like by the time they develop those more powerful warp engines, it wouldn't necessarily make sense for them to develop an entirely new range of ships and then do it again once war cruisers and war destroyers become a thing. So the sample that they use, I guess, in CL-51, they're kind of like a trial balloon, in a sense, to sort of see basically whether or not how the concept of warp refits works for the pre-existing ships. And because it's probably not feasible to reprint the current ships and, you know, edit back in the warp refits that they probably should have had in the first place.
Right.
But then on the other hand, selling an entirely new product where the only difference in the ship is that they have warp refits, that doesn't really sound like a great option either. So I guess...
if you're going to refit if you're going to refit a ship, you do more than just the warp engines.
The thing is that in Omega, a lot of the ships, they've maxed out, like the quote-unquote middle-year ships that they have. Most of them have kind of maxed out their weapon systems or other features. So the only thing left is to basically look at the warp engines and stuff. So it's kind of the reverse for as it is for a lot of Alpha Empires, with the exception of the Paravians, because in Module C6, most of the middle-year Paravian ships, like literally the only refit they get is to add a couple of warp auxiliary power reactors. And there's no shield differences, because they already have six phaser ones. Like, for example, the heavy cruiser already has six phaser ones and four phasers, four phaser threes. And it's already got not great shielding, but decent shielding. So there's not a lot of room to add anything else and stuff. So in a sense, it's almost like Mega-like in the sense of the design choices that were made. But anyway, so I guess, and actually the other thing too is the Trobriand ship that's in that issue. Do you have an affinity there, Paul, or no?
Yeah, which issue?
51.
51. Yeah, I got 50 through 54 sitting with me.
Okay. So, because in Module Omega 2, the Trobriand were given a quote-unquote command cruiser, but what they were really being given was a heavy battle cruiser, because the ship is huge compared to a heavy cruiser, and it doesn't enter service until like the midway 160s or so. So they basically, the concept of the ship that you see in CL-51 is that it's a quote-unquote early command cruiser. So it's basically, I guess if you think of a Klingon comparison, the ship that you see in CL-51 is intended to be more like a D-7C, whereas the one that they have in print in Omega 2 is more like a C-7. So, and also there's like a historical scenario that was done for the Spet and Wife 149 involving the Federal Republic. And when it was first written, it uses the other command cruiser, but this one is basically meant to release that one in that same scenario, because the other one wouldn't have existed back then.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see it there.
Actually, you're talking about the Trobriand, right?
Yes, that's right.
It's not in, well, it's not in 51. It might be in the 51 supplement, but not in 51. The 51 has the Prober and the Mazeron.
Maybe I'm thinking of 50. Which one am I thinking of then?
52?
No. Look, wait, hang on a second. The 50. Actually, maybe the 52, because 52 has a pair of Zosman ships. I remember that. And,
So if it's a battle cruiser, what is its a heavy weapons armament?
Well, because the regular clan cruisers they have, it's say it's got two. The standard heavy cruiser that they have, if I recall correctly, it's got one heavy implosion torque on two mediums, and then it's got a pair of implosion bolts on the front.
Right.
And the
pair of implosion bolts on the heavy. Wait. The standard heavy has heavy, two mediums, and two implosion bolts.
That sounds about right.
All that.
Is,
wow, that's a lot of freaking. That is insanely powerful.
Well, bear in mind that it also has very weak phaser complements, and so it has to rely on that heavy firepower more. And also, they can't overload, they can't fast load the torpedoes. The bolts can be fast in two turns, but the torpedoes take three.
Yes, the bolts.
And the ships are, I mean, even the standard heavy cruiser, it does take a lot of killing to get to defeat it as well, because it's got the armor and all the hull boxes and stuff.
Yeah, are you? Gary, are you talking about the early command cruisers? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
that's in 52
command ship compared to the one that's in Modular Omega 2.
Yeah, it's in 52.
Yeah, so
52.
Yeah.
So, what does the early command cruiser have?
Two implosion bolts. Bum, 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 bum. Let me look. I see two of the medium implosion torpedoes.
Yeah.
And has one. Oh, was that just one? Yeah, just one of the heavy implosion torpedo. You know, it takes up two boxes. Okay. And it's got
okay, so the same armament as the heavy.
Mm-hmm. And six phaser ones. You know, the
yeah, so it's basically the same heavy armament as the standard heavy cruiser.
Yeah, so the main difference is that it's got the flag bridge installed.
Extra.
And also it
okay.
in a warp refit in the Y-170s. To bring it up to speed 30.
So what is what does the upgraded battle cruiser have?
I don't have the SSD in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it has at least one more heavy, and I don't know if it has the same implosion bolts or not. But it's basically, as I say, it's kind of like the step up to a C7 from a D7C. So.
An extra heavy is pretty nice, but going from a heavy to a super heavy would be really nice.
Well, the Trogon aren't able to put super heavies on anything short of a dreadnought. So, at least so far,
right.
So far this has been
can we say X-ships?
They're not quite as flexible as their Romulans with their Plasmars.
What's that?
I was wondering if X-ships might have super heavies, so...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, because even the Romulans, they have the Plasma N, but they're not quite the same as the Plasma Arc. I mean, like, you can get a King Eagle X, but you're probably better off with the two M's at that point.
Yeah. Well, the M is a nice torpedo. Its advantage is that you can hold it. Not quite as powerful as the Arc, but it has the same range, and it can be held, which is huge.
Understood. Yeah, I was noticing the Peruvian anti-proton ships in capsule number 54, which I know you mentioned before.
Yeah, because those are actually worth a discussion as well. But because I guess
interesting. Well,
by the time they get them, it's too late for them to help with the Andromeda and Soldier. So the purpose of those ships is really more to fight other Omega Empires.
Right.
Like, for example, the Prober or the Mistrons or so on. And so I guess, but even so, I mean, there's still probably going to be remnants and elements in a ramp raiding space. So I'm sure that'll end up fighting them somehow.
Oh, but, understood. Yeah. Jeez. I'm looking. Range 5 to 6. D6 plus 3 for the to hit is a 9. So I assume two D6. Three to four, range three to four.
The
anti-proton.
Are you talking about the implosion bolts?
No, this is anti-proton.
Oh, the anti-proton
beam. And if you get that all the way down to the range zero, it's a to hit of 10 with a 2d6 plus 3 for damage.
This is the Ymitrians or
Paravians. Paravians.
Oh, the Paravians have the anti-proton beam?
Because what happens is in Y206, the Paravians show up at the old Ymitrian homeworld. And unfortunately, the Ymitrians look at the Paravians and think that they're sky angels. Because the Ymitrians are very superstitious like, when it comes to various things. So the Paravians basically take the opportunity to enslave the Ymitrians. And it just so happens that there's samples of buried anti-proton technology scattered around the planet. So once that gets digged up, the Paravians take samples of it and they put it into production. So they basically, what you see in CL-54 is a selection of ships that have these anti-proton weapons installed in place of the regular weapons that Paravian ships would have.
Right, which is usually quantum wave torpedoes.
You're basically... Well, that's the intention, but I mean, it hasn't been formally spelled out, but I guess my preference would be that, yes, they'd have standard phaser ones and quantum wave torpedoes in the... not counting the anti-proton weapons.
Well, the anti-proton phasers are probably the best phaser in the game. Best phaser in the game. Nothing's even close to it.
Understood. But, okay, well, I think that we should wrap it up for this evening. Definitely, Gary, you need to come back because I want to discuss the quantum wave torpedoes as they're plotted out in module P6, which I'm pretty positive I've got a copy down in my basement. I just have to go look for it because I know I bought a copy of module P6, the campaign designer's manual, basically. That's the one that had.
Don't forget to email me a copy of that Starfire rules, please.
Will do.
Okay.
Well, for what it's worth, C6 is available as a PDF mm-hmm. if anyone wants to check it out. It's there's a rule book PDF, and then the SSD PDF comes in both black and white and colored versions, if anyone would rather have the color fancier one. But yeah, so I guess
I bought that a while back. Bought that C6 a while back on E23 or something like that.
Yeah, it's on there. That's right.
Hmm? Yeah. I'm sorry. That's a Galactic Smorgasbord. Thank you, Chris. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the wrong one.
Oh, you're thinking of P6. Yeah.
What's that?
You're thinking of Paul is thinking of P6. That's the Smorgasbord one, but C6 is the Lost Empires one. That's the one that has the Carnivons in it as well.
Okay, yeah. C6, not P6. Yeah. C is a cat.
I'm pretty sure I bought
that. Okay. I bought that module. I gotta go downstairs and pick it up. get it out of the box. So, anyway, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. So, you guys have a good night. So, definitely, this was a kind of P6 episode, a smorgasbord of various topics, and definitely went from A to Z and back to somewhere in the middle, like M or N. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.